people that are leading Israel are Ben Gvir and Smotrich and Netanyahu, and they call for genocide. If you want to support that, support it. But then say that this is what you support. If you just say, I support Israel, and forget that this is what you support, then you're lying to yourself. And I think that when we see people like your new chancellor, Merz, saying that we have an unconditional support to Israel, what they are actually saying is that we have an unconditional support to the extremist Kahanists and fascists in Israel, not to the Israeli people, because the Israeli people do not want them.
There's a huge difference between the Israeli government and the people right now. It is important to put more pressure, political pressure, to put red lines for this government, but to speak of it as limits for this government that is also not good for the Israeli people who are living here and been, you know, suffering from this government also since October the 7th. It gives more space also for us to build a political power that can really overthrow this government, that can bring a political agenda that will bring equality between people, an independent Palestinian state to my people, ending the occupation on the West Bank, ending the apartheid, ending, you know, this annihilation that's really happening right now in Gaza.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Lucas Andreka, and you're listening to the Dissents Podcast. This week, my guests are Rula Daoud and Alon Lee Green. They're co-directors of Standing Together, which is Israel's largest grassroots peace movement that brings together both Palestinian citizens of Israel and Jewish Israelis, like Rula and Alon Lee themselves. I'm super happy that they joined me here on Dissents to talk about their fight for an end to the Israeli government's genocidal war that we see, to talk about the complicity of the German government, and also talk about how people abroad can support the cause for just peace. Okay, guys, let's just jump right into the conversation. Rula, Alon Lee, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Guys, we had much to cover. I want to start maybe with your personal current situation and your situation as a movement. Mm-hmm. It's almost 2 years now after the Hamas massacre of October 7th, and the situation is quite dire, one has to say. Netanyahu is still waging war in Gaza. Gaza is by this point almost completely destroyed and thousands of Palestinians dead. And we see kind of a post-war order shaping in this war, which could include annexation of Gaza and the West Bank by Israel. So ultimately, ethnic cleansing on a large scale, things that essentially qualify for genocide in terms of international law. And it's been you guys standing together, which have been within Israel at the forefront of demanding an end to the war in Gaza, pushing for a safe return of the hostages, and pushing for a just political solution, a just peace as well. We covered you in the past a bit here in the podcast, so maybe you can give our listeners kind of a bit of an overview. How's the situation for you guys right now? I imagine quite difficult.
Yeah.
How are you guys holding up? Maybe we start with Rula.
Yes, I will start, and then maybe Alonli can follow with more, but I'd say that the political level is, we are also, you know, I think it's a week now after the ceasefire between Israel and Iran, 12 days of a war between, you know, another country. And the situation that was here was very much different and much more scary, because it was, you know, the feeling was of a real war, you know, on Israel. The kind of missiles you had from Iran is very different from the missiles that came from Hezbollah, from Lebanon, and the ones that came from Gaza. So the feeling was very much different. And I think even today, people are still trying to understand or grasp the reality of, we just had another war. And there is a huge feeling among people that, you know, this is not the end of all wars. Something is coming up. Something is cooking.
Okay.
And I think one of the most, you know, political situations that we still have in here is the fact that people in Israel, you know, the majority of the people don't know what the government is planning to do. And they don't see solutions. They don't understand what kind of a strategy is this government really leading. And this is a feeling of not being, you know, certain, not knowing what's going to come up, and always being on the way of, you know, you are preparing yourself for something that is going to be worse than the thing before. So you have also a sense of not believing and not, you know, having faith in the government that you have in here. But at the same time, this government, this coalition is, you know, doing a lot of work into narrowing more the political, you know, the democratic space that we once had by having more laws that take more rights from minorities, especially you know, Palestinian, Arab Palestinian citizens of Israel. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge, you know, feeling of uncertainty that is found right now. And at the same time, you hear, you know, you hear that there is a plan, okay? There is, like, Trump wants to have coalitions, wants to have maybe peace. They want to have summits. They take it back to, how do you call it? Abraham Accords, right?
Yeah, Abraham Accords.
Yes. And they're trying right now, this government, especially with Trump, with the Trump administration, to maybe lead some kind of a voice that speaks about, you know, peace. We had a lot of wars, but now it's time for peace. But they speak of a peace that doesn't really include having or declaring a Palestinian, you know, an independent Palestinian state. So this is the kind of the politics that we see in here, and, you know, other changes. But when it comes to the movement, you know, after October the 7th, we grew very much. We are still the largest grassroots movement inside of Israel that both has, you know, Jewish and Palestinian citizens within it. We see our role not just in, you know, demanding and stop to the war on Gaza, the starvation, the bombing, and having a deal to bring back the hostages, but also to demand a future that, you know, can give the people living on this land, you know, equal rights, just peace, an end to the wars or the cycle of wars that they get us in again and again and again. And this is why, you know, our demand is to have a peace that can give both people equality and independence, which means also declaring an Palestinian independent state next to Israel. This is the way that we can get, you know, forward into a place where we can have real security in this land, and not just to live or survive, but also to prosper as people living in here. Yes, we are tired. Yes, sometimes we think this, nothing can surprise us anymore. But then again, you know, another war comes with a new enemy, if you would say, this is the word that is used in here. And then you have to understand how to push your people. What are the demands that we want right now?
Hmm. Yeah, Rula, thank you. Just in a bit, we want to talk about how the situation is for you guys politically in Israel. And we want to also talk about the diplomatic landscape, of course. So, for example, Germany's unconditional support for right-wing government, which is holding up until today, even though it's becoming clearer and clearer, the atrocities, the ethnic cleansing that's happening already, and a vision of, like, full-scale annihilation or expulsion of Palestinians from their lands. So how that support from abroad, from a government like Germany, but as well other governments like the United States, how that affects your work for peace within Israel society.
Yeah.
But I want to first bring Alon Lee in, give you the chance to tell us what's on your mind right now.
I think we are speaking right now at a moment where Israelis are the most depressed they have ever been, the most tired. The conversation, the ruling conversation, is about immigrating out of the country, about asking how can we have a future in this place? Do we have a future in this place? Of course, with this direction, we have no future.
Yeah.
People understand that our government can brag about the total victory, quote to quote, as they say. But at the same day they declare victory, we have four funerals of people dying out of a Iranian ballistic missile in Be'er Sheva. We have seven funerals of soldiers dying in Gaza. We have 120 people being shot to death in Gaza while being starved, standing in line, waiting for food. Mm. And this is the total victory. This is how coming back to routine, according to our government, looks like. And when this is the normality, when this is the cue of ending the war with Iran, which was, as Rula said, the worst experience we ever had in regards of getting missiles over our houses and cities. When this is coming back to normality, people ask, can we live and survive this normality? And the answer is that people are just numb, are afraid, cannot be handling this reality anymore. And it is such a strong gap between those huge slogans of Netanyahu and Trump and the leaders also of other countries supporting Israel and its policies, mm-hmm. and the real reality of Israelis. And I think people that are listening abroad must ask themselves, not how do they support Israel or they, you know, wave the Israeli flag. This does not help Israelis. Mm. Israelis need good lives. Israelis need security. Israelis need normality that is sane and is quiet. And what we have here is the complete opposite. Yeah. And I think we are in a breaking point, to be honest.
Hmm. So you both pointed towards the fear, the depression, but also the waning support for this government, which for long could say, okay, it's a war of self-defense, but now it's becoming clearer and clearer. It's a war of annihilation. And you'd pointed towards a waning support for this government within Israel society.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the peace camp, which you belong to within Israel society, still seems kind of isolated. People might not support Bibi Netanyahu and his genocidal war, but the peace camp does not yet draw enough people to put an end to the killing, let alone starting a peace process. So maybe you can talk a bit about the broader shifts in Israel society after October 7th. So since almost 2 years now, mm-hmm. and what you guys could achieve up to this point, and what's kind of for you guys right now, or for the peace camp in general, what's kind of the biggest hindrance or the biggest enemy towards, getting a break with what the Netanyahu administration is doing, getting a real political shift within Israel. And there's also this international situation, because Germany, for example, we can talk about that later, is giving a lot of diplomatic cover, for example, to the Netanyahu administration, which is a huge problem. And
yes.
I want to talk about that later. But maybe you can elaborate a bit more on the public opinion, so to speak, within Israel towards the war, towards any kind of solution to this conflict right now, and where you guys stand in that.
I think it's a journey. We are speaking about a journey that started after October 7th with a huge trauma, a trauma we still bear and we still face, a huge fear. I think both Wula and I remember that on October 7th, it was unclear what is really going on. How deep can we leave our houses in Jaffa, in Tel Aviv? Mm-hmm. Are we going to face armed, people that are coming to kidnap us, to murder us? The level of fear and losing the sense of safety was to the deepest possible core. Mm-hmm. And this created a public feeling that right now there's no choice but to go to this war. And of course, the very first hours after it started, we had our entire leadership and the entire opposition, for that sake, facing cameras and writing in their social media the same kind of messaging. Now is the time for revenge.
Yeah.
Now is the time to erase them. Now is the time to bring them back to the Stone Age. Now is the time to cut every food, running water, electricity, and so on to people. Of course, there are no innocent people in Gaza. They are all to blame. This was the choir, and it was unanimous. It was every possible part of the political system, of the Jewish political system. Mm-hmm. This was the beginning point. It was such a miserable and lonely beginning point for a movement like ours that was the first to speak. We came out the day after October 7th. We came out with a statement and a call and a petition saying revenge will not bring them back home, referring to the 250 Israeli hostages. A war of revenge and killing will not bring back the dead. Only a deal will bring back the hostages back home. And we use the term deal, the first Israeli entity in the realms of politics and media, we use the word deal. And of course, even the Jewish left-wing parties were mocking us and saying, who are you talking, making a deal with, the ones that are just committed a massacre? And we said there's no choice because the war will not be able to bring them back. They're already in tunnels and we need to keep them alive and not go to revenge.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning. And slowly, very slowly, in the next year, slowly the spaces opened up around us and we were less lonely and we managed to bring more people into the camp of resisting the war and calling for life. At the beginning, we called it the camp of life, opposing the camp of death, the government of death, the camp that is promising us just more death and no solution. And slowly we could also expand our activity. At the beginning, it was not even allowed for us to go to the street and demonstrate. We had to hire wedding venues because the police did not give us permits to protest. So we bypass it by hiring private wedding venues to have our rallies. And then expanded. Of course, the amazing work of the Hostage Families Forum also allowed us to expand the support of ending the war. But now, 19 months or more after, we are in the moment where 70% of the Israeli public demand to end the war. So it's not that we're alone here. 70% of the Israeli public demand to end the war and to bring back the hostages with a deal. And among them, around 50% also say that we need to end the killing and the starvation in Gaza. I know there are a lot of polls here. Some polls show different numbers, but in our polls that we look, there is a solid part of the Jewish society saying that starvation and killing of innocent people is not the way. Now, what we're trying to do is deeper than just ending the war. The aim of Standing Together is not just not to have violence, is to solve the deep cause of why we have violence. And we believe that as long as we militarily control millions of Palestinians that are not the citizens of Israel and do not have basic human and civil rights, we will have violence. You cannot maintain this reality. You cannot just manage this reality. You need to solve this reality and not deepen it. Because if you try to manage or deepen this reality, you are inflicting violence and the only thing you will get back is violence. So what we are saying is that we need to solve this reality. And the way to solve this reality is to end the war in Gaza, to end the military operation in the West Bank, to end the occupation, this military control over millions of people, and to have Israeli-Palestinian peace. And this message is something we need, and we try to create more space and more support around.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to hear from you guys that public opinion in Israel shifted with respect to putting an end to this war, and to some extent also towards the collective punishment in genocidal warfare through starvation, for example. But still, the Netanyahu government seems to be firmly in power, I guess, having enough support within Israel or not enough resistance, and having especially enough support internationally by a complicit government such as my government, the German government, also making no secret out of their vision of post-war peace, so to speak, what they mean by peace, which could well include the displacement of the Palestinians that are left in Gaza, the annexation of the West Bank, which happened in the shadow of the war, more of the settlements. I mean, this is a right-wing, religious, ultra-nationalist government with even fascists among their ranks. So I wonder if you could shed some light for us on how this administration could end politically. Because elections in Israel are so far away still. It's, I think, 2026.
November.
So November next year. And Mona, as I say, you are as a grassroots movement. You showed no political ambition so far, parliamentary ambition. But maybe you have ideas on what kind of coalition has to be brought together and what your role could be in this kind of situation to bring about an end to that administration democratically. Because one cannot imagine like a vision like you have it with that kind of administration for sure.
So, yes, the elections are supposed to be next year in 2026, but there are many shifts that are happening. And one of, you know, the political agenda of Bibi Netanyahu is to survive. He wants to survive because this is the way that he assures himself, you know, not being really taken into court and you know, not really been forced with going into jail, maybe. So the political, you know, the way he plays the game is by eventually, unfortunately also, is by having another war and another war. Mm. You know, October the 7th, after the massacre, and then the retaliation of this government and, you know, on Gaza that is still going on. When you ask people today in the streets, people will tell you, you know, average Israeli is that they don't understand why, you know, the bombing is still going on Gaza. What is the strategy? Where is it going to? What's going to happen after? Like, there is bombing just to bomb people. This is a sentiment that we do have. And jumping from one war to another, from opening another front with another, you know, entity or another country, is also to longer the stay of Bibi Netanyahu in the government and to try for him to build, you know, more, how do you say, support so that he can build another coalition when, you know, the elections will come again. But even now, after the war with Iran, that there was this kind of euphoria because, you know, Iran is a country that speaks very loudly about demolishing Israel, and they a ticking clock of when this country will be abolished. So there is a real fear within people, Israeli society, especially Jewish Israeli society, from what it comes, you know, by Iran. And this is why you had a very high percentage of people supporting the attack on Iran. But still, after 12 days of you know, war, when the ceasefire came and the polls we've had, we still see, because people understand that there was no real victory on attacking Iran. You know, the nuclear project was not demolished. It only kind of took it back a few months, but it's still there and there is really still a threat. Mm. So there's no real shift in the support that Bibi Netanyahu has within the Israeli society. The only shift is that he has more right, radical people who would, you know, vote for Ben-Gvir and Smotrich that come to his side. But still, he doesn't really have a majority. He hasn't been able to really form, you know, if election will be in the next 2 months, I don't know if he's going to still be, according to today, okay, we don't know what's going to happen next week, if he will have a huge coalition and he will have his government. Mm. But what really is scaring from within the Israeli politics is that we don't really have an opposition. The opposition, you know, the center and the left are not real opposition to Bibi Netanyahu. Just 3 days ago, there was a committee that discussed throwing one of the Knesset members, Ayman Audi, who is a Palestinian Arab, because he said something, things that supported Hamas, which is a complete lie. But what they are trying to do with that committee in, you know, firing or expelling, I don't know the right word in English, but to vote against...
Removing,
yes. Mm-hmm. So the Knesset can remove a Knesset member that was elected by the people if they have the majority of 90 people in the Knesset members.
Okay.
So this committee passed. So there's going to be, you know, these voting in the Knesset in this month, in 2 weeks. And what they did, the opposition, they voted with. They want to take it into the Knesset, which means that we don't really have a opposition. What the right wing and Bibi Netanyahu is trying to do on the political spectrum, he doesn't have anybody objecting him. And this is the real fear that we have inside of the Israeli politics. We don't really have an opposition. The opposition believes the same things Bibi Netanyahu wants. They don't give him a fight back. And what we see our role as a grassroots movement is the same as we've done since, you know, the day one, and especially after October 7th, is to build from within the people in the field an opposition, to affect the people living on this land by not just having campaigns of what we need right now, but also of speaking of, you know, how we can affect the politicians. When people go out to the streets and they demonstrate against the war, we've seen a shift happening in the last year and a half. As Aloni have said, at the beginning, people wanted, like, you know, kill them all. But then when you went out and you had campaigns and you spoke of what was happening in Gaza and what we need to be done, you saw a shift in the public opinion that had also put pressure on the government that demands, you know, a ceasefire and then an end to the war and then going to a deal. This is the kind of effect that we can do by organizing and mobilizing people around issues that demand a stop to this annihilation war, a deal. And if they want to have peace on the next level, so this peace must be also done not just with countries that we that Israel never had war with, but also the peace with the people who are living on this land, the Palestinian people, that can assure, you know, only by having peace with them, there can be real security on this land. So our role is by, you know, building that political pressure from the streets, from people, building a different political agenda that will eventually affect who you vote to. Sorry, the political agenda that you want people to be affecting their parliament members. I'm sorry, my English today is rusty.
So no, no worries.
I haven't slept very well for 4 days. So
it's perfectly fine. Maybe, Alan Lee, we can talk a bit more about the role of the international community, especially the role of Western countries like the United States and Germany in providing Netanyahu with the diplomatic support, something which seems to me quite central for him staying in power within Israel and committing the atrocities that this administration has committed in Gaza, for example, but also in the West Bank.
Definitely.
For example, in Germany, there's been like a slight shift in rhetoric only. So people in the administration like Merz and our foreign minister, they show themselves concerned. But in the end, there are no real consequences to put Netanyahu under pressure. No weapons embargo, no sanctions of any kind. Germany still delivers weapons and blocks any kinds of sanctions that could hurt this Israeli government and show some red lines. And on the other hand, though, we see some nation within the European Union, for example, like Spain, where we see a change of stance towards Israel, like where they're trying to build up more pressure.
Yeah.
So going forward, I wonder how important it is from your perspective as a peace movement within Israel that the international community puts up more pressure.
Yeah.
And that especially Germany stops its so-called unconditional support for what's in reality a support of ethnic cleansing and mass killing. We see that on the ground. It's so obvious. Yes. And what kind of worst and best case scenarios you see in that constellation? And I think the worst case scenario might as well be that Netanyahu has enough support internally or not enough resistance within Israel, but also enough support internationally to go through with kind of endless occupation, even ethnic cleansing on a large scale. But yeah, your opinion on that.
I will say that I think that the worst case scenario is that Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and the group of messianic extremist people that are leading our country will draw enough power and support from the international coalition that is giving them an umbrella of support that is holding them in power and allowing them to do those atrocities, this ethnic cleansing, this annihilation of Gaza, even though they do not get the support of the people in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst case scenario, that you, people in Germany, the government of Germany, the government of the UK, the government of France, the government of the US, of course, will allow our people to be held under this leadership that we don't support. And I know we have our role, and we can speak about it in a second. But the problem is that without this support of the international community, they will not be able to execute this ethnic cleansing and annihilation and systematic oppression and killing of children and families in Gaza and in the West Bank. We need to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we see people like your new chancellor, Merz, saying that we have an unconditional support to Israel, what they are actually saying is that we have an unconditional support to the extremist Kahanists and fascists in Israel, not to the Israeli people, because the Israeli people do not want them.
Yeah.
And this is actually treason in the Israeli people. They are treasoning and they are destroying and they are hurting the people living in Israel that want a different future than the one we are led to by our government. So this is a fake support to Israel, and we do not want this support. So please take it away from us and do not try to give us this fake support. And in this very bad war scenario, we will not have only what we have today: starvation in Gaza, killing in Gaza, yeah, ethnic cleansing in Gaza, and the same starting to happen also in the West Bank. What we will have is complete annihilation of the Palestinians, and this is the plan. And we are thinking and seeing and hearing, quotes that we cannot believe. People, for example, in our government saying, put them in camps, put them on trains, put them in ships away from Gaza, build settlements in Gaza, destroy the West Bank as we destroy Gaza. These are all real things that they're aiming for. And we need to understand that this is not an us and them kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Because if they, the Palestinians, will have this, Israelis will also pay the price. So the reason we are opposing that is out of solidarity towards the Palestinian, for sure. We're not ashamed in that. But it's also our self-interest to oppose that and to demand a different path. Mm-hmm. And the different path, and which brings us to the best case scenario, is that our government will understand that not only that they lack the support here internally, and that if they are going to elections, they're losing. Because as Rula said, every consistent polls show that they are losing in elections. Yeah. They are really losing in any elections that will be held today. But also they don't get the ability to execute their plans with weapons that are coming from outside and money and support and international diplomatic umbrella that is guarding them. I think that in this scenario, they're losing elections. We understand that there is a Palestinian leadership that we can come to diplomatic agreements with, that we have the support of all the Arab countries around us of this kind of agreement, and that the Western world is doing a shipment out of supporting automatically any act of killing that Israel is executing into supporting peace, because I wish you will support peace. This is the right thing to do. And when we have this support and we have these internal forces and change within, we can come to terms and, you know, reach Israeli-Palestinian peace, which will mean a very simple thing. And I don't want to speak about where the line will go, one state, two states. This terminology lost a lot of its relevance. We're speaking about a simple reality. And in this simple reality, all people living on this land, whether they're Jewish or Palestinian, all 14 million people living on this land will have the same rights. They will have the right to live. They will have safety. And they will have equality, freedom, and independence. Mm-hmm. This is the reality we're looking for. And it can be a Palestinian state alongside Israel. I think it must be a step we go towards to. And it can be other creative ideas if someone will have an idea, like the idea of a confederation or so on. But it cannot be a reality where people are not free or not equal or not independent. Because if these things are lacking, people will continue fighting for them. And this is not a desired reality. And it is not a reality we can accept.
Yeah. Thank you so much also for talking about the complicity of the German government. This can't be stressed enough. The last government and this government up until today, given the atrocities we see, have not only done nothing to prevent them, but actively supported them. I mean, they are still delivering weapons that are used in war crimes. And personally, I really hope that this lawsuit by Nicaragua in front of the International Courts of Justice against Germany for its complicity in a potential genocide, that this makes wave, because, this country needs to put on the spot for what it has done and what it's still doing there. On the other hand, we see right now, or we see like in the past couple of weeks, some changes in the international landscape. We see countries within Europe like Spain or Ireland, for example, or Norway, recognizing a Palestinian state, and by that symbolizing and showing, okay, stop there, Netanyahu. And we see also countries pushing for like economic pressure, suspending, for example, Israel's European Union association, and also some sanctions by kind of an international coalition of some willing partners under, for example, Canada, some sanctions on settlers, for example. So I wonder if you could maybe speak to that. How important would it be to put more pressure on the Netanyahu administration, to build up the pressure by the international community, mm-hmm. also speak about how important it would be that Germany has a real paradigm shift. I mean, we hear now some mild voices of concern regarding the situation, but that's only because, I guess, the international pressure is so big and it's so obvious, the atrocities, that they can't deny them, like on a complete denial scale.
Yeah.
But we see no consequences, no real consequences coming out of these voices of concern. On the opposite, they are still delivering weapons. There's no weapons embargo.
Yes.
They are still doing everything, for example, when it comes to the EU association agreement that some countries want to revisit. Germany is blocking these efforts. So they're still doing everything to provide cover, diplomatic cover for Bibi. So maybe talk about how important these efforts are, like these efforts for putting pressure on the administration, and how important the role of Germany would be in something like this, because it's, I guess, the second largest partner of Israel, besides the United States. Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to arms and weapon supplies, I think that we see the shift happening. I would say it took too much time when it happened, but we see shift happening. Mm. And it does come back because, you know, people who went out also to the streets and kept on demonstrating and demanding and wanting their own governments to do something different, you know, to be part of putting red lines to this government. And that shift is happening. I think it's, you know, all of the things you have said that in Europe are being done right now that have been pushed forward by different countries, you know, standing for a Palestinian independent state. Speaking of, you know, what kind of what do we agree on doing, and what do we don't agree anymore on doing? It's all of these things do put pressure on the Israeli government. But I do just want to relate, you know, to one thing also. You know, when the U.S. or when Europe, countries in Europe, when they give declarations of, you know, not supporting Israel in one way or another, they seem in many ways also to lack, you know, to speak about differentiating between Israel as a, you know, as a whole state and between the people living in Israel. And this is one of the things that can, you know, cause more problems, mm-hmm. because there's a huge difference between the Israeli government and the people right now living in Israel. And as have we said, you know, all of the polls right now do not give this government, you know, any chance of staying. They want something different. They want to change. So when there are, I would say, sanctions, or when there are, you know, I think the word is sanctions that are put by other governments, there should be, you know, this differentiating between what's happening because of this fascist government and not because of all of the people living inside of Israel. This will make more effect on people. When we speak about, yeah, when we speak about the actions of this government, and that this government does not reflect all of the people living in Israel, this can make, you know, more impact on the people within the Israeli society more than speaking in a very general way. Because, you know, it's also a fact, not all people in here are, you know, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and Bibi Netanyahu. And it helps also when we shift the political situation in here. When people see that international communities and countries are not against them, but against this government, it gives more space also for us to work. So yes, it is important to put more pressure, political pressure, to put red lines for this government, but to speak of it as, you know, limits for this government that is also not good for the Israeli people who are living here and been, you know, suffering from this government also since October the 7th.
Yeah, being guided by the understanding to not blindly support Israel, but also not outright condemning it, as we, of course, also see internationally, which is not productive. One follow-up question, though, regarding the complicity and the problematic discourse in Germany, because you guys, you've been to Germany several times since October 7th.
Yes.
You've met with people out of the political bubble in Germany, but so far to no substantial effect. When we look at, like, the German foreign policy towards Israel and Palestine, there is just a shift in rhetoric, but no real shift in policy. So maybe you can talk a bit about how you perceive the discourse here in Germany, because it's not only the political elite that's failing, it's also the media discourse, which is so skewed and so ignorant and in denial towards what's happening in Gaza, for example.
Yeah.
So maybe, Alan Lee, you can talk a bit about how you perceive the discourse in general and what you kind of encountered during your visits in Germany. What kind of ignorance, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alan Lee.
Yeah, I actually want to maybe touch on 2 points from two different sides that things we met when we were traveling Germany. It can be a name of a book. Mm. So the first phenomenon we met when we were traveling to Berlin was meeting with politicians. Actually, all political parties but Die Linke. All political parties but Die Linke that we met. We met, first of all, with a wall. And this wall was... Rula and Alon Lee are coming from Israel and Palestine saying, listen, there is a terrible war going on. Listen, so many people are losing their lives and are being killed. Listen, people are being starved. And the answer we get from 99% of the political parties is, we acknowledge the right of Israel to exist. And it's like, yes, but we didn't speak about the right of Israel to exist because Israel exists. There's no question about it. We're speaking about what Israel is doing. What is the policies that you're supporting? And the answer is, yes, there is a Staatsräson or reason of state in Germany.
Yeah.
And we acknowledge the right of Israel to defend itself. And then we say, yes, but we're not speaking about whether Israel exists or defending itself. We're speaking about the fact that this is not self-defense. This is not how we can really defend ourselves. And there is like a general gaze to the air. Those politicians, some of them are ministers we met, cannot bypass this and speak normally about the questions on the table. And this is amazing. This is not allowing us to even move forward into a real conversation. Mm. It was so refreshing to meet with the parliamentary group of Die Linke last week that was just having a good conversation about what can be done, what can be influencing Germany into pushing Israel and the alliance with Israel into constructive places, into not committing war crimes, into not supporting the things that are not only bad to the Palestinians, but also not good to the Israelis.
Yeah.
And this is completely disappointing. As we said before, it is not helping any Israeli. It is just helping the ones that are in control. And just a reminder again to those Germans who think that with the Staatsräson, they can just, you know, end their arguments in the politics around Israel. The people that are leading Israel are Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and Netanyahu, and they call for genocide. If you want to support that, support it. But then say that this is what you support. If you just say, I support Israel, and forget that this is what you support, then you're lying to yourself. So this is one thing. The second phenomenon that was very, very interesting to meet was actually of the movement for Palestine, which we saw an amazing demonstration, amazing, amazing demonstration that was led by Palestinians who live in Germany, and they managed to mobilize tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, you've been at the United for Gaza protest in Berlin.
We haven't been in it because we just came after, and it was... At some points, the discussion around it was a bit difficult to comprehend why, if the goal is to stop this reality continuing, to stop the genocidal ambitions and to stop the annihilation and the killing, why do we need to have entrances bar into the movement and not instead build a coalition that can have anyone that support the cause? And it seems as if the discourse within the movement is more of signaling and having check bars that you need to like to tick and to use specific words in order to enter the coalition and enter the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we found it a bit not strategic. For example, people told us that that maybe movements like Standing Together and other movements of people that are Israeli based cannot enter the coalition because they don't use specific words.
Can you give an example?
Whether you use the word Zionism or not, whether you use the word genocide or not.
Yeah.
Now, Standing Together has clear positions, right? And any other Israeli movement that works against the annihilation, against the killing, for the freedom of Gaza, for the freedom of Palestinians, against that systematic oppression, might use or not use terminology, because terminology eventually cannot be something that just answers your guts. It must be part of a strategy. And Standing Together is basing its strategy within Israel. We have a society to work within, and we have a people to convince, and these are the Israeli people. Mm. And if you are saying that because of our strategy, even though we're doing the work, we can enter or not enter, this is counter-strategic. And I think that a lot of the left spaces and the progressive spaces around the world around this question are more concerned on the question of what words you use than the power you can build. And the power you can build should be the strongest, meaning you have to reach the widest coalition possible, not allowing some forces to enter just because of how they sound is not allowing you to build enough power.
Mm. Maybe also, Rula, you can add a bit to this point, because I know that in the past, for example, you have been attacked, for example, by pro-Palestinian people that think of themselves as pro-Palestinian and solidarity groups, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Of being kind of a fig leaf for a racist, Zionist, imperialist governments, that we have those terms, right?
Yes.
So maybe you, Rula, can elaborate a bit more on these logics of exclusion and misunderstanding, but also maybe at some point with some people, post-colonial anti-Semitism, where the whole Israeli society is imagined as like the one big evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, which is maybe not dominant within the global pro-Palestinian movement.
Yeah.
So maybe you can elaborate a bit on these fault lines, which prevent also from having like a bigger voice for peace and for a political solution that's good in the end for all people that live between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea.
Yeah, I would say it's like very big, complicated words that you are using for this one question, but I will try to simplify things.
I'm sorry.
No. It actually, it's good because it emphasizes the differences that we really have between, you know, what we live in here and what we try to do and how we are, you know, observed by people abroad. And I do understand there is a huge difference between people. And being a Palestinian, you know, a citizen of Israel, it's very different from being a Palestinian who lives in the West Bank under apartheid, and of course from a Palestinian who is living hell right now in Gaza, and from Palestinian diaspora, people who have been, you know, a second and a third generation refugees, that they hold the stories of their grandparents, of how they were kicked from their own homes, which is a story that I don't have because my grandma was able to come back. She left, she went to the borders, you know, with my family. If nothing really changed, they would probably be in Lebanon in a refugee camp right now. But I always say I am one of the lucky ones. Not that lucky, but lucky that I was able to stay at my own land in my own home. And yet there's a huge differences between all of us. But my reality is, you know, is very different from other realities. And in my reality, some people love calling us normalizers, as if we normalize, you know, the occupation and very big bad things that's happening that we didn't really choose. But my reality is a reality where I am born as, you know, a Palestinian inside of the state of Israel, being a second class, living under, you know, laws such as the Kamenetz law, the nation state law, reminding me of my place in this specific country and under this regime. But still, with living all of that, I still choose to wake up each and every day and to understand what I can do in order to stop what's happening, to build a political power that can really overthrow this government, that can bring a political agenda that will bring a talk about equality between people, an independent Palestinian state to my people, ending the occupation on the West Bank, ending the apartheid, ending, you know, this, you know, annihilation that's really happening right now in Gaza. This is what I choose to do each and every day. Mm. And also, you know, my reality is very different because I live in a place where there are two people living. There is me, my people, the Palestinian people, and there is Alonli and his people, the Jewish people. And a fact, you know, that I'm not going to pack up and leave. He's not going to pack up and leave. This is home for, you know, 15 million people who live from, you know, one sea to the river. And the real possible solution is not a fantasy for us. It's not me kicking all the Jews or the Jews kicking all of the Palestinians, because this will not happen in reality. It will not. The reality that I want to change, the things I want to achieve, is a place where we can really live in equality, in security, and, you know, belonging. The feeling of belonging to a people is not a crime. And going out in the streets and being safe is not, you know, a wishful thinking, but is a reality. This is my reality. This is what I want to change. This is what I seek to change, because simply, you know, none of us is going anywhere. And some other people who do not see where we live and how we live think that maybe by wishful thinking that somebody will just, you know, vanish, disappear, or stop claiming this place to be his home because he was born into it and within it, is just really simply, you know, fantasies that will not happen. Hmm. We want people to help us achieve a reality where we are equal, independent, and free. And achieving that reality means also understanding the facts that we have on this land. Nobody is going anywhere. And in order to, you know, my independence and my safety relies on the independence and safety of the Jews that also live here with me. The same goes for people in Gaza, people in the West Bank. It's like we have this connection with one another, whether we want it or not. So what happens on one side of the borders must be the same on the other side, or none of us will have, you know, a life of real freedom. And this is what many, you know, I would say organizations, maybe activists, don't really understand, because they see everything that's happening here as, you know, as one, how do you say it, like in one perspective. They don't see, you know, the complexity of the society and the place that we live in. Hmm.
You guys, just two more questions. One caters towards the audience that is listening to us, which is mainly in the German-speaking parts of Europe. So, of course, Germany, the biggest part, but also Austria and also Switzerland a bit. Given what needs to come together, like in Israel, but also internationally, to bring about any kind of path towards some just peace, what can people do to support your cause, for example? Mm-hmm. And what can people do living in their reality, for example, here in Germany, to give voice or give visibility to you guys and to guys that are actually try to bring about any just solution,
yeah.
Be it that they are just progressives, be it that they are in positions of power, be it that they, for example, are journalists that listen to this podcast and inform themselves, be it that they are politicians or in some kind of staff or something, or be it that they're part of the pro-Palestinian movement. So what would you say to people listening to us? What can they do to support that kind of vision that you bring forward and maybe also directly support you?
Yeah.
So three easy, relatively easy ways to support us and the cause. One is to demand your own political systems, your own governments, your own politicians to align with a solution, not just to blindly support Israel, not just to condemn Israel, not just to speak about the topic and tweet about it, but to align with a solution. The only way to move forward is not having those fantasies Rula just spoke about, and not just having those blind automatic support for Israel. It is actually to align with the question of what should happen in reality, how pragmatic it is, and how can we move forward, and to align the system in Israel and the international system towards this solution. So let's move the conversation towards a solution. And of course, any kind of solution, it must also include stopping sending bombs that are killing Palestinians, right? It is not just, you know, a title. It's a whole system that we need to build. The second thing is that in a lot of European cities, we have groups that are friends of standing together. Local groups, also in Berlin, in Switzerland, there is one even in Austria, groups that are working on the ground to create support for the message and to create support for the movement back home of Palestinians and Jews fighting together to end this reality and to achieve freedom and equality and independence to all. And you can join those groups. Just look on Google or Instagram. You will find these groups and you can join. We just met with the amazing Friends of Standing Together in Berlin. And the last one is that you can go on our English website, standingtogether.org, and you can become a monthly supporter of the movement. Just 5 euros, 10 euros, 15 euros a month, double thousands of people that are doing that can really support a campaign in Israel, can support mobilizing young Palestinians in universities in Israel, can support a rally, can support a lot of the activities that we do to protect the aid coming to Gaza from extreme settlers trying to put it on fire. We have daily activity that is both building the support to end the occupation and to end the war, and that is creating change on the ground. When we go and we confront those settlers and we protect the aid trucks just a minute before they go to Gaza, we are creating change on the ground, and you can support it by doing a monthly donation to Standing Together.
Thank you so much. I'm going to become a monthly supporter.
Yay.
I don't know why I didn't do it already, but I mean, this podcast is paid for by monthly paying members.
Amazing.
But after this talk, I'm going to become a paying member of you guys and encourage, of course, all our listeners to do that as well. Just for an outlook, you both, of course, there's so much reason for despair. That's obvious. But maybe you can just briefly say what gives you hope in these times and what keeps you fighting.
I think that after this war with Iran, like, it became, we were a bit devastated for a couple of days. That's a reality. But I think the question is it's more than just hope. It is the understanding, you know, also acknowledging that, you know, nobody will come and just save us. Nobody will wake up abroad one day and say, this is the time we want to save all Israelis and all Palestinians and everybody living in that land. If we don't, you know, do it ourselves, our reality will not really change that drastically. So we do understand that, you know, we can't really give up. It's not a privilege that we have. It's a fight that we need to lead in order to really change our lives. And I do think that, you know, also, after each and every war that happens, with each and every, you know, bottom that we, you know, get into it, we still see that we have people with us, coming with us, going out to the streets, believing in us, in our message, in our campaigns. So, you know, being part of a grassroots movement also that has thousands and tens of thousands of people, that is not just you, you know, holding the front all alone, for me at least, it brings me hope. Yeah.
Brula, Alanli, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Ja, Leute, danke, dass ihr reingehört habt. Das war der Dissens Podcast für diese Woche. Tut mir doch auf jeden Fall den Gefallen, spread the word. Dieses Interview, die Stimmen von Rula, von Alanli, von Standing Together, die müssen, wo es nur geht, gehört werden. Das ist meine Sicht auf die Dinge. Also teilt doch gerne das Interview, wo ihr nur könnt. Und ja, ich habe die Ankündigung am Ende des Interviews wahrgemacht. Ich bin direkt nach dem Interview, bin ich Freund von Standing Together geworden. Wenn es euch finanziell möglich ist, monatlich oder einmal an Standing Together zu spenden, dann macht das doch bitte. Es ist so wichtig, was die Leute da drüben in Israel machen, was sie auch in ihren Chapters in anderen Teilen der Welt machen. Das braucht unbedingt Unterstützung, wenn wir irgendeine Perspektive auf einen gerechten Frieden in Reichweite rücken wollen. Ja, soweit an dieser Stelle von mir. Ich möchte euch ganz herzlich danken, dass ihr mit am Start wart und würde mich freuen, wenn ihr nächste Woche wieder einschaltet. Bis dann.